Good morning. It is time to get up with Patrick and Lamar. The last two MVPs are the first two favorites this season, but only one is favorite in every game. Then, Tampa Tom may be a thing, but he isn't the most important thing on his own team. This one will surprise you. It's on the way. And then, say it ain't so. You will hear one number that strongly suggests this could be the last year for Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now. From Bristol, Mike Greenberg here on a Tuesday, and delighted you've chosen to get up with us, as our friends and our analytics department here at ESPN have done us a favor. The Football Power Index is out, the predictions are ready, and we've got a lot of thoughts right after we get up and go. Take you around the world of sports on a busy morning. It starts in baseball, where the Rays, the Astros, and the Angels have opened their facilities for limited team workouts. In Tampa, 14 players took part in playing catch and conditioning exercises, working out in a makeshift weight room on the field. Coming up, Jeff Passan will tell us why this is an enormous week for Major League Baseball. He's live in a half hour. Elsewhere, Georgetown coach and NBA legend Patrick Ewing has been released from a hospital after being treated for the coronavirus. He's 57 years old. He's now recovering at home. He revealed his diagnosis this past Friday. To the NBA, where the overwhelming sentiment among players is that they, quote, really want to play. That according to their executive director of the Players Association, Michelle Roberts, who is conducting team-by-team calls to gauge reaction to the NBA's plans to resume the season, which will most likely take place in late July. And NFL Vice President Troy Vincent acknowledged that the league, quote, failed miserably in implementing pass interference replay reviews last season. His comments came during a broader discussion on the Sky Judge proposal that owners will vote on later this week. We'll talk more about that as the morning goes, but we're going to start with this. ESPN releasing its Football Power Index. We call it FPI this morning, and fans of the Green Bay Packers are not going to like what it says. FPI gives Green Bay just a 43% chance to make the playoffs. Of course, the Packers went to the NFC Championship game in January, where they lost to the 49ers, and the overwhelming reaction has been they didn't do a whole lot to address any holes they may have this season, looking forward to see if they can improve themselves. So let's get the conversation started there. Diana Rossini, Dominic Foxworth, and Ryan Clark are here this morning. And RC, I can't help but wonder, if the Packers do fail, let's live in a world where FPI is right, and the Packers don't make the playoffs this season.
Yeah.
What does that mean for Aaron Rodgers?
That means the Packers are going to get a whole lot of love, Greeny. This is just great. We're just going to sweep Aaron Rodgers on out of here. We're going to get the first batted Hall of Famer on his way. Because what we're going to say is, even when we have Aaron Rodgers, we aren't competing. We can't even get to the playoffs, not the wild card round, not the divisional round. And so what's the use in waiting on getting Jordan Love some live action reps if we aren't at the top of the NFC with one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time? And you can look at this two ways. You can say that it's the executive's fault. You can say that it's Matt LaFleur's fault for not getting enough to help Aaron Rodgers win some games. Or you can say this is great planning. We understand that we are looking forward to the future and that Jordan Love is that future. And if that's the case, if you don't make the playoffs, why wait to start your future plans? Let's get Jordan Love in there, see if we could trade Aaron Rodgers, get something back for him, or what will that cap hit do to our team? And you got to remember, your starting quarterback will be on a rookie deal if Aaron Rodgers is gone. So if this team doesn't make the playoffs, I think we see Jordan Love sooner than later, and Aaron Rodgers will be wearing new colors next year.
Wow, so Nick, let's pick up the thought there. Could you see a scenario where it's week 15 and the Packers are out of it, and Aaron Rodgers is sitting on the bench watching the first-round pick on the field?
Well, I mean, if it's week 15 and the Packers are out of it, they absolutely should put Jordan Love in there, but I don't think that necessarily means that Jordan Love should be the starter next season. If it's week 15 and they're out of it, there's no sense in having Rodgers out there for potential injury or anything like that. But if Aaron Rodgers still has a very good Aaron Rodgers-like season and they miss the playoffs, which is absolutely possible because it's not like their defense was great last year. The defense played well, but it's in large part because of the turnovers they created, which we all know can be random and they may regress. So I could see them missing the playoffs and Aaron Rodgers still having a good season and them coming back and handing the ball back to Aaron Rodgers, despite the fact that there'll be a lot of pressure to get the ball to Jordan Love and move forward.
Yeah, they may want to hand the ball back to Rodgers. He may not want it from them. Diana, let's talk about what all this looks like, because All of it sounds good until you start looking at the salary cap ramifications and it becomes overwhelming. What does it look like if Rodgers and or the Packers decide they want to part ways at the end of this coming season?
Yeah, Greeny, there are a lot of numbers involved in this, but just taking a broad look at it, it would make the most sense for the Green Bay Packers to move on from Aaron Rodgers in 2022. In 2021, the cap hit is still so big against the Packers. They'd save about $4.5 million, which in total, that probably looks to be the best situation. But really, if we are talking about the Green Bay Packers moving on from Aaron Rodgers, it is not going to be after this season. It most likely won't be this season after that. It would be that following season there. I'm not really sure what Ryan Clark is talking about in terms of saying that Jordan Love is going to get in there and make a difference, because it seems like he's saying that he could perhaps give this team a chance. How can Aaron Rodgers even have a chance if this team has done nothing to give him weapons? I know we could probably debate this all day long, but I don't believe that the Green Bay Packers are going to move on from Aaron Rodgers this year if they don't make the postseason, Ryan.
Go ahead, RC.
Guys, here's the thing. We're not debating that. I didn't say that Jordan Love was going to make a difference. I didn't say that putting Jordan Love in as opposed to Aaron Rodgers would make the Green Bay Packers better, because in that case, I would have said that they should have drafted him. What I'm saying is, if you are the Green Bay Packers and if you are Brian Gutekunst, the GM, and you're looking at this team as constructed with Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback, we are regressing. Can I go out and get something for him to add to this team as I start to move forward with Jordan Love? The premise of having Aaron Rodgers there still is to teach Jordan Love and to keep this team competitive, to try to win while he's here and also be planning for the future. But they just didn't do enough to make this team better to compete with the San Franciscos, the New Orleans Saints, and those different teams. And so now you're going to sit back, look at your team as a whole and say, how do we get better moving forward? And maybe that's trying to trade Aaron Rodgers, add pieces, and move forward with our young quarterback. What I do know is they moved on from Brett Favre in Green Bay, and he was 13-3 in that last year. So you do what the hell you want when you run these teams. And so if they think it's time to get Aaron Rodgers out of there, I believe they will.
To be clear, I think there's a lot of room for criticism here if this thing really doesn't go in the right direction. You go from 13-3 to out of the playoffs to trading or moving on from Aaron Rodgers in the span of one season. I'm not sure how anyone could be anything other than unimpressed. Meantime, let's look through some of the rest of what we have from FPI here. For the second straight year, the Kansas City Chiefs are the top team in ESPN's Football Power Index preseason ratings. It's also the second straight year Kansas City is the initial favorite to win the Super Bowl. They're chased right now by the Ravens, who have the second highest chance to win the Super Bowl at 17%. FPI actually has Baltimore the favorite in all 16 of their regular season games, including that Week 3 matchup against Kansas City on Monday Night Football. And the Saints are the third best team, according to our analytics, and have the third best chance to win the Super Bowl, the best among all NFC teams at 13%. And then as we look at the next grouping here, I mean, it really does shape up to be a fascinating season. The 49ers are the only other team with a percent chance better than 10%. Take a look at the Cowboys and the Eagles sitting there sort of neck and neck with Tampa Bay and Tom Brady. The preseason FPI favorite the last 2 years has gone on to win the Super Bowl. The Chiefs last year, the Pats a year before. So these guys know what they're doing. Let's talk about the Cowboys here. Dominique Foxworth, the Cowboys listed as the fifth best chance to win the Super Bowl and ahead of the Philadelphia Eagles. What do you think?
I mean, I like it. I think that they were listening to me for the last several weeks when I said they have a better quarterback in Dallas than they do in Philadelphia. So I think they're a super talented team that lost some close games last year. I think they were 0-5 in one possession games. That sort of stuff turns itself around, and they have a talented defense that underperformed that I expect to play a lot better. And they have an MVP caliber quarterback. He played an MVP caliber football for much of last season. He fell short in some key moments, which I think skewed the way people perceived him. But I think he'll step up and play well this season. That team does have a chance. I know they're fifth, but it's only 5%. So 5% is not a lot. They're not super confident in the Cowboys, but I do think it's a good spot for them.
Why is Ryan Clark laughing?
Because, man, I love Dom. I miss my dog. I miss being in the studio with him. He is going to die on this Dak Prescott Hill with a number 4 tank top jersey on because he wants his guns out because he really believes in this guy. I mean, it's just crazy to me. And I thought we went through this last year. I remember last year leading into the season, many people were picking the Dallas Cowboys to be their NFC representative in the Super Bowl. And I was like, dog, pump your brakes. This team's ceiling is 10-6. And I don't necessarily know that they've done enough amongst some of those teams that they were lumped in to just be put ahead of them, to be put ahead of Tampa Bay, when that's a team that wins 7 games, the Cowboys win 8, and they have improved vastly. And I just don't think the Dallas Cowboys have. I don't think the Cowboys can beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I picked the Philadelphia Eagles to win the NFC East. And not only are the Cowboys not my 5th team overall in the NFL, they're not my 5th team in the NFC. And so to me, this is just another episode of us overvaluing the Cowboys, or maybe looking at their total worth and saying, you know what, a team worth this much has to finally make it to the Super Bowl. But I'm here to tell you, they didn't make it last year. They ain't made it for the last quarter century, and they will not make the playoffs again with the way that this team has been trending.
Diana, Cowboys have a new coach. They got to get their quarterback signed. We assume one way or another he'll get in there. We assuming that he is the starting quarterback for them this year. Are the Cowboys better than they were a year ago?
It's taken 5 years, Greeny, but I finally agree with Ryan Clark on something. The Cowboys are like that sparkly toy where I think we all want to believe that this is something we want to own. We want to be part of this. They had a great draft. They really did in terms of giving Dak more weapons. But that second part of that defense, that secondary, they finished 25th in turnovers last year, and they lost Byron Jones now in this offseason. So defense is still going to be a major issue, and I'm always going to be really hesitant, Greeny, when it comes to a brand new head coach coming in. And with this condensed offseason, these strange times right now in the league, I just think it's going to be a difficult transition for Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott. Yes, they have tons of weapons, but why are we ignoring the Eagles? They have had consistency and injuries after injuries after injuries. They can't have any more injuries this year. It can't happen again to Philly. So as much as I think the Cowboys could be good, I'm with Ryan Clark. They got to get through the Eagles first.
Go ahead, Nick. I'll give you the final word.
Yeah, I mean, it's splitting hairs. They're both very good teams. I don't think they're losing Byron Jones. I think it matters because I love corners, but Byron Jones was never a turnover machine. So losing him, I don't think impacts their turnovers. I think a lot of turnovers are based on randomness. So I'm betting on randomness correcting itself and them having more turnovers this coming season, and Dak Prescott continuing to improve. He's gotten better every season. So I think that it's fair to say I'm the president of the fan club, because a lot of my prediction is based on me thinking that Dak is going to be better than Dak was last year.
I love it. We are making our prediction today based on randomness. I'm very comfortable with that as the premise. We're just getting rolling on a very busy morning here on Get Up. Coming up with Tom Brady out of the division. The AFC East is wide open, and don't take my word for it. Our analytics are absolutely certain of it. We'll explain coming up. But first, Neek, Sneaky Hembo has one for you this morning, and here it comes. Which NFL team exceeded their 2019 FPI win projection by the largest margin? Which team was the most better than expected? That's the question. The answer is next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Wendy's 2 for $5. Price and participation may vary for a limited time only. All right, Dominique Foxworth, Hembo's calling you out. Here we go. Which NFL team? We put out our analytics today, their projections for the season. Which team exceeded their win projection last year by the largest margin.
I mean, I feel like it's easy. It must be a setup because it has to be the Ravens, right? No one was really expecting Lamar to be an MVP, and they went on and had the best record in the league. Like, that's a layup, right, Himbo?
Right, Neek. That is correct. That is the right answer. I think you thought maybe you would twist yourself into a pretzel by trying to think around him. But you're correct. They exceeded their win projection by 5.5. The Ravens, the Niners were right behind them, the Packers and the Bills following it up. But Dominique, while I got you, you're 1-0 against Hembo for the day. Let's see how we do here as we run the hurry up. The ESPN Football Power Index, like San Francisco in the NFC West. Do you agree or disagree, and who's the biggest threat?
I absolutely agree. I think San Francisco is good. They replaced DeForest Buckner, which was their loss in the middle. That defense is still going to be quite great. And Kyle Shanahan is the best schemer in the league. But I do like the Cardinals. Kyler Murray is coming on strong. And I told you a couple weeks ago he was my MVP pick. I think it's possible that division could be the best in football. And Kyler Murray and the Cardinals could be in contention late.
Yep. And oh, by the way, Russell Wilson plays in that division too. Meanwhile, FPI likes Minnesota in the NFC North. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. I think Minnesota is a good team. However, I think that they
agree.
I'm sorry. That's my bad. That's supposed to be for Ryan Clark, and I score that one E1 if you're keeping score at home.
I was going to let Foxworth get it.
Go ahead, RC. Do you like Minnesota to win the division?
I think Minnesota is a team that's vastly improved. You look at the Diggs trade and what they got back for him. They turn those into more picks. You get Justin Jefferson from LSU early on. Jeff Gladney, Cam Dantzler, two guys to put in that secondary because you lose two of your corners. And I think this team is poised to win. And Gary Kubiak does what Kirk Cousins loves to do with the run and the play action pass. So I look forward to the Minnesota Vikings being better.
All right, and let's go to the AFC East from here because the FPI likes Buffalo, making the Bills an ever-so-slight favorite over the Patriots to win the AFC East this year. It's essentially been the New England Invitational for most of the last 20 years. And Buffalo has made the playoffs two of the last three seasons as a wild card, hasn't actually won the division since 1995. So if I get this one right, Neek, I'm coming to you first. Do you like Buffalo to win the AFC East?
I mean, I do. I have to. It feels like both of those teams, the Pats and the Bills, are very similar in that they had offenses that weren't great, but were okay, but they had defenses that were outstanding. And it seems like the Bills' defense is going to return almost fully intact, and they got better on offense. If they believe in that quarterback that they have there, this is a year that they must win it. As for the Pats on the other side, their defense got a little worse. They lost some mobility, and they lost the best quarterback of all time, so you expect them to regress. The Bills can't win it this year. I think they're going to have a lot of questions about their future with Josh Allen and with that entire team. Frankly, this is their chance to put it together and finally take that division back.
Well, Diana, all four teams in the division have young quarterbacks that they figure to build around for the future. How do you expect the one with the Patriots and Jarrett Stidham to play out?
Well, you're not going to see an offense out there that's going to be Tom Brady-esque. The New England Patriots are going to do what the New England Patriots do best, which is tailor their game to the player. In terms of what their game plan is going forward, we don't know exactly what their plan is, but we do know that with Brian Hoyer on this roster, he was brought in because he's comfortable with the system, and it seems the fact that they didn't make any other moves during free agency to bring in another quarterback or to even go for a quarterback during the draft, they're going to ride with Stidham. And again, for New England, 11 straight divisional champs with the best coach to probably ever coach the game. But I'm going to go with Dom here and say that I think the Bills are actually going to win the division this year and dethrone the New England Patriots.
Ryan, what do you think?
I think that's exactly right. I agree with both of my colleagues here. When you look at the Buffalo Bills and the New England Patriots, they both played great defense, but down the stretch, the New England Patriots defense began to falter. And we saw some different things when they played teams that actually had good football players on the offensive side of the football. And so I think we saw some cracks in that defense, which is why they still tried to address it in the draft. And they didn't get better on the outside. Many people thought that the reason Tom Brady's game regressed last year was because he didn't have the weapons. Well, they didn't improve out there. You lose the greatest quarterback of all time. And I don't think that you can ever underestimate what it is to have the greatest quarterback of all time on your team and for you to be able to coach him hard. For that to be the example that you set of the Patriots way, and then he goes out and perform. You no longer have that. Now, this is going to be Bill Belichick's greatest coaching challenge of his career with Jared Stidham and this new look 2020 New England Patriots team. And I just don't think they're good enough to win the East.
But, Nick, don't you think he loves that? Like, I have to, the one thing Belichick has not had on his side for the last 20 years is low expectations. I've got to think he's got everybody right where he wants them right now.
I believe that he loves the idea if it works out, but he's not really going to love it after Jared Stidham. They hand the ball to Jared Stidham with 2 minutes to go, and they need him to bring them back. It's going to be hard to love it then. I'm really surprised that we've gone through this whole segment without Greeny bringing up the fact that I'm sure in his heart he believes the Jets are going to win, right?
No, I've never in my life believed the Jets are going to win. You obviously know almost nothing about being a fan of the New York Jets. No Jet fan thinks they're going to win. And candidly, whenever we think they're going to win is usually when things go the worst. It is when they are flying under the radar that they have some semblance of a chance. Well, let me just put the question to you guys then this way. Diane, I'll go to you first. If one of the other two teams we haven't mentioned in this, the Dolphins or the Jets, are going to crash the party and make it interesting, which one do you have your money on?
I'm actually going to go with the New York Jets, and that's not me kissing your butt here this morning. I'm going more with the idea that there's some consistency there. Sam Darnold's growth, right? You have Miami. I'm going to still put them in this rebuilding year. So I think it's going to take them a minute, but this season coming up, I think it's going to be the Jets over the Dolphins, but in the end, it will be the Bills winning that division.
RC, Jets or Dolphins?
You know, right now I'm going to go with the Jets because I believe when you look at this team and what Sam Darnold was toward the end of the season, he seemed to be improving. They tried to give him more protection this year, and Greg Williams has another year with this defense led by Jamal Adams if he is to play, which I believe that he will. And so I think that that can be a team that can be sneaky, especially if Sam Darnold gets hot and we see some of the things we saw that were explosive last season from him as a passer and using his legs to make secondary plays.
Right. So the eyes have it. Clearly, what we've determined here is that the Jets are the overwhelming favorite this year to win the AFC Championship. Meanwhile, what is more likely this NFL season? For the Ravens to go 16-0 or another team to totally tank for Trevor? Neek answers the question next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
Your next question.
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions for you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Here we go. Time to answer the question with Dominique Foxworth. I got a bunch of hard-hitting questions for you this morning, Neek, and it starts with this. This is the first season, because of the new NFL playoff format, in which an entire division can make the playoffs. Which division has the best chance to do it?
Well, I think it's potentially the best division in football, the NFC West. I mean, I talked a little bit about this earlier. The 49ers are obviously going to be one of the best teams. I like the rising Cardinals because of Kyler Murray. I think that he's becoming really good and has a chance to be a potential MVP level player. And then obviously Russell Wilson can do anything down there with, or up there, excuse me, with the Seahawks. There's a great chance that they could win. And we're back to my man Kyler Murray. He's special, and they added a great receiver there. And then we also have the Rams. The Rams' offense is not what it once was, but their defense has the two very best players at their position. From Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, it's hard to count out a team with that type of talent on defense and with the mind of Sean McVay on offense. If Jared Goff can get close to what he was with that Super Bowl run, I think that's a really good team. They're going to need to split up those games amongst each other and dominate outside of division. I think they have a chance to do it. It's super slim, but if anybody, I would pick that division.
Yeah, remember, there are seven teams in each conference that are going to make it this year, which means three wild cards, which means an entire division could go. Next, Our Football Power Index favors the Baltimore Ravens in every game. The Jaguars are underdogs in every game. Which is more likely? The Ravens win them all, or Jacksonville loses them all?
I mean, I think it's the Jacksonville loses them all. As good as the Ravens are, things broke their way last season. I think that they'll have another very, very good season, but it's unlikely that they'll go undefeated, especially because there are still some question marks. As much as I love Lamar Jackson, as much as he's improved as a passer, there's some question marks about him coming back from down. They've been dominant in most of their games last season, so we'll see how that works out. And I think there is incentive for the Jags to not play well. They have a coach that looks like he's in lame duck status, so they may want to work their way for a quarterback with Minshew as their quarterback now. They might want to start tanking for Trevor, as you see Trevor Lawrence making those plays right there. I can understand them getting close and then saying, really don't gain anything from winning these last few games. And that sentiment would never be the same in Baltimore. They're going to want to win them all, but I don't think that they will.
Yes, people always used to say it's harder to lose them all than to win them all, which is absolutely ridiculous. Nothing is easier than losing them all, especially if you have a reason to. All right, one more for you here. We'll do the Goldilocks treatment. Our Football Power Index gives the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Tom Brady the 7th best chance to win the Super Bowl. Is that too high, too low, or just right?
I'm going mama bear here, Greeny. I think it's just right. I think that's about where they should be. We aren't still sure, as much as we know how great that Tom Brady has been throughout his career, we're not sure how great he can be in this system. He wasn't great last year as a passer. Some people blame it on the fact that he didn't have the receivers he needed, but his numbers on target throws were not as great as you would expect from a guy like that. And I do think that if they win, it's going to be because that defense is playing as well as it was. I think they were one of the top, I think maybe 6 defense in the last 6 games last year. So if they win, it's going to be because that defense dominates and Tom Brady is able to make some big plays at the end. I don't know that he's going to have a statistical outburst that some people hope he does or expects him to have with all those weapons down there.
Okay, I think you may have mixed up your bears. It's been a long time since I read that story, but I think it's Baby Bear who thinks everything is just right. But let's not get sidetracked.
No.
I believe it is. I'm going to put Hembo on that. Hembo, will you research that, please? I don't want to sidetrack the entire show over this discrepancy. Let me come to you, Ryan Clark. The Buccaneers. Should the Buccaneers be, when you put together the shortest possible list of teams you could see in the Super Bowl this year, should Tampa be on it?
Yeah, I think Tampa should be on it. Now, that's the NFC list for sure. But when you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the team that was able to win games last year, obviously not enough with the quarterback who threw 30 interceptions, with the quarterback who gave away games on pick sixes. And now you put Tom Brady in that spot, one of the greatest of all time. So you expect turnovers to decrease and not necessarily output increase, but you expect for that team to be better in the situational football moments of the game. And I think we're underestimating what having a player on your team like Tom Brady could do, adding Rob Gronkowski, and also underestimating what this defense is in Tampa Bay. You add another piece in Winfield. You also go outside and you get a corner. So I think that this team going forward can be a lot better than they were last year. And then I don't know why people are trying to temper what we can expect from this team.
Let me throw something sort of working against Brady here. He's obviously been working very hard getting ready for the football season because he clearly hasn't been playing a lot of golf, but that's a different conversation for a different time. But, Nick, I feel like he has two things working against him. One is the pandemic, which means joining a new team as veteran as he is, learning to play with new players and learning a new system, having basically no offseason doesn't work well. And then this is the year they choose to change the playoff system, so only one team will get a bye. So it is 50% less likely that his 43-year-old arm gets a bye week to start the playoffs. I think both those things work against him.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think actually Tim Hasselbeck, when he was on last week, convinced me that the first one doesn't matter as much because Tom Brady is going to install, and I think Byron Leftwich is going to install a lot of Tom Brady familiar plays. Maybe he's going to have to learn some new words, but I think he can handle that. But I think they're going to run similar plays that he's comfortable with. It's important. It's incumbent on his teammates to learn how to play around him. But I think that the way that he pulls it off, if he does not get a first round bye, again, goes back to that defense. I think you're right. It's going to be a lot to ask Tom Brady close to his mid-40s to go through the entire season and also go through the entire playoffs from the wild card round. But if that defense can step up and they only need him to make a few plays a game, I think Tom Brady's capable of doing that.
Okay, and perhaps no better way to put a ribbon on this conversation than to say we were both wrong It was Goldilocks who found everything just right. She's not Baby Bear. Goldilocks and Baby Bear are not the same person, nor is she Mama Bear.
No. Yes. Mama told Papa Bear is too hot, Baby Bear's too cold, Mama Bear's porridge was just right.
Mama Bear
Goldilocks liked it.
This is actually true.
I don't think so.
This is actually true.
We got another 90 minutes to figure this out. We're here talking about the Bucks, not the Bears right now. Okay, well done. Guys, I'm coming back to you in a few minutes. But we have really a very important week here in Major League Baseball as three teams, the Rays, Astros, and Angels, have opened their facilities for limited team workouts. In Tampa, 14 players took part in a bunch of different working out there. Players wore masks except for when they were working out specifically. They played catch. They did conditioning exercises and all of that. But as we bring in our Jeff Passan, I know I've seen some notes from you. Just how important is this week for Major League Baseball, Jeff?
Greeny, I try not to be a prisoner of the moment, but I believe this is going to be the most consequential week in Major League Baseball in the last quarter century, dating back to the 1994 strike. You know, we had 2002 where there was a question if there was going to be a strike, but ultimately there was not. Now the Major League Baseball season hangs in the balance, and it's going to come down to MLB and the Players Association figuring out how to split the revenue that they generate in 2020. And that is not going to be an easy thing to do. But as we have said on this show, on SportsCenter, everywhere for 2 months now, this is the moment where it gets important. And we're going to see if these two sides that have been at loggerheads for a long time now can come together and bring baseball back in 2020.
What should we be watching for? If we, meaning all of us, I assume, if you're watching the show, you're a sports fan, you want to see baseball come back, what would be good signs? What are we watching for?
Well, today, Greeny, the expectation is that Major League Baseball is going to finally offer the long-awaited financial proposal to the MLBPA. And it's going to be interesting to see the details in there, whether they actually go with the 50-50 revenue split, which has been a non-starter for the Players Association from the beginning, or if they go for something more like a pay cut with deferred money, which at that point, it puts the pressure and the onus on the players to say, okay, we're willing to accept a greater pay cut than we already have to make sure baseball comes back this year. And that's not going to be easy for the Players Association to do. They have been steadfast in their belief that losing half of their money if there is an 82-game season is too much at this point for them to take another pay cut. A compromise may, Greeny, come in the form of games played. Mm-hmm. And that's something to watch out for in the counter proposal that the MLBPA brings back. If they have 100 games, say, as opposed to an 82-game schedule, that's more money they could make. And potentially, they could take a pay cut off of that.
Well, 100 games feels like a lot based on the condensed time that we have. Quickly, Jeff, you told me 2 weeks ago, sitting in these very seats, that things were going to get ugly. Do you expect it to get ugly this week?
I don't know that it's going to be pretty necessarily, but what I think is going to happen is we're going to have a good back and forth, and that back and forth ultimately is going to lead the sides to a point where they can play baseball. Let's remember, Greeny, the NBA is coming back, it looks like. The NHL is coming back, it looks like. Major League Baseball is the summer sport, and to lose those months to those other leagues would just be catastrophic long-term for the league. And I think they recognize that.
That's well done, Jeff. A huge week for Major League Baseball. You will be all over it. We'll have the very latest here every single morning. Well done. Meanwhile, tonight on ESPN, this game is going to do very well, I think, on the TV ratings in Chicago. It's Game 7 of the 16 series. The Cubs, the rain delay, the extra innings, the first World Series championship since 1908. Live it all tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Coming up, Cam Newton is looking for a new team. You'll hear why one of his former teammates says his old team did him wrong and holding back no punches. You'll hear it next. Get up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We're back on Get Up, and this was very interesting yesterday. You're aware that former Panther quarterback Cam Newton remains unsigned as questions remain about his health and other things, but his former teammate Mike Tolbert is not holding back. This is what he said to The Athletic about the way the Panthers mismanaged Cam when he was in Carolina. Quote, they've been doing him wrong timing-wise for the past 2 or 3 years, if you ask me. It goes back to his shoulder surgery. Everyone knew his shoulder was messed up in the middle of the year 2 years ago, but they waited until the offseason to get ready to start to have shoulder surgery. Makes no sense. Then as soon as he got hurt last preseason against the Patriots, they were saying, oh, he's got a high ankle sprain. I looked at it on film carefully. You knew it was a midfoot sprain, a Lisfranc, something like that. But you wait till December for him to beg you to have surgery. He shouldn't have been out there week one and week two. So, Ryan Clark, I'll start with you. Do you believe the Panthers mismanaged Cam Newton?
I do believe the situation was mismanaged from a medical standpoint with Cam Newton. What I do know from being a player is a lot of times you have input on those things, whether or not you're trying to get back to play or whether or not you want to continue to be on the field. So I don't necessarily know if it's all on the Carolina Panthers. But when you look at how his shoulder was dealt with, you also look at how his foot was dealt with the last season. I do think there's been some inconsistency in on how they view the severity of his issues, of his injuries, and which way they want to take care of them. And now they've left him in this position right now where he doesn't have a team, where he isn't healthy, where he wasn't able to show different teams that he could be the quarterback going into the 2020 season. So overall, I feel like Cam Newton's injury history hasn't helped him at all, and he wasn't helped by the Carolina Panthers. But I would have to believe that Cam Newton himself had some input in that.
Well, the primary issue here, Neek, with timing, of course, involves the pandemic. Were it not for the pandemic, we have to assume that Cam Newton would be on a team. But the timing that they chose to release him, meaning waiting through everything, I guess maybe holding out some hope for a trade, didn't help either here. Do you believe in total the Panthers did not do right by the guy who clearly has been the greatest player in their franchise history?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on what you believe a franchise owes a player, especially their best player in their history. And I think they owe Cam Newton more than they gave him. I think trying to get some value for him for a trade is not crazy, but you have to realize after several months that no one's trying to go get Cam Newton, and you should have cut him in time to let him be a real free agent. And I do think that obviously Ryan's right. The player bears some responsibility, a lot of responsibility in how their injury is handled, but football players want to play. And especially when you're a leader, the quarterback on the team, you need the medical professionals and the team to protect you in those situations and step up and say, we're going to sit him down. We're going to make sure he's healthy. We're going to get him the surgery when he needs it, because it's so hard for a player on a team, especially a team leader, to step up and say, I'm too injured. I don't care what they say. I need a surgery. I feel like the team and the media and the fans might turn on a player, specifically a player like Cam Newton, who it seems like has had a hard time kind of ingratiating himself with so many fans across the country, specifically those down in North Carolina.
RC, really quick, if we all assume that Jacksonville's not interested in part because they may have other interests in their season, give me a team real quick right now that should be calling Cam Newton.
You know what? Other than the Patriots, I really don't know. I think right now Cam Newton's best shot is going to be waiting to camp start and to see if someone wants to have him as a starter, give him a chance to compete. If not, he's going to have to be okay with being a backup.
I would love to see the Patriots make that call. They don't seem to have any inclination to doing so, guys. Stay close by. We're doing much more football as we go. But let's go to the college game, because we're inching closer to the scheduled start of the college football season. It is now 95 days away from the scheduled opening kickoff. But as schools and conferences across the country plan their return, Charles Barkley was on Paul Feinbaum's show yesterday expressing concern about what it may look like.
The one thing I hope they don't do is separate the teams and play the haves and the have-nots. I think that would be awful for the game. I don't want to see college football where only the Power Five conferences play, or only the SEC and the Pac and the Big Ten play. I mean, I don't think that's fair just because they are big schools and they're big money makers.
It's always worth hearing from Charles, but as Laura and Paul join us here, Paul, it was on your show that he said that. What was the context? Because as I read the comments and hear them there, I'm not exactly sure I understand what he's concerned about.
Greeny, I've known Charles for nearly 40 years. I covered him in high school and college. Does anyone ever know what he's talking about? But I think what he was referring to is this. if only a handful of schools play, Big Ten, SEC, maybe some of the ACC and the Pac-12 and others don't, is it really fair? That's my best guess at deciphering him. Laura, you have a shot?
Yeah, you know, Paul, I think what he's talking about may even be a little more based around these group of five programs. And the reason why I put that out there is because I do think that Charles probably talks to some of the same people that we do, or maybe he just has some of the same thoughts. But there was this time period where many were so concerned about how these group of five and these smaller programs were going to survive all of this. And I think that's why you saw a hesitation to maybe go full steam ahead from some of the places that thought they could, just to try and protect these others. Now that shifted. Now everyone's like, look, we just got to do what's going to be best for us, whether that's right or wrong. And that is where you kind of look around and say, I wonder what the viability long term will be for some of these smaller schools and smaller programs. And it's just unfortunate in all of it. We've already seen some of these universities have to cut some of their sports. And you just wonder if it eventually trickles to football.
Yeah, that's really, you know what, that's interesting, because we sit here and we talk about Alabama and Ohio State and all of them all the time, because that's what most people are interested in. But these are important football programs. They're important to their schools. They're important to their players. Mm-hmm. Is there serious jeopardy that we could see the kind of change as a result from this that they don't recover from quickly, or maybe even ever? Laura.
Yeah, I think so, Greeny. And it's sad, because we, of course, talk about all these big-time players and big-time programs that lead guys directly to the NFL, and all these draft picks that come out of the Ohio States and the Alabamas of the world. But then there are some who have gotten a scholarship and an education and an opportunity to play a game that they love in some of these smaller schools. And I don't know how possible it's going to be for some of those schools to survive if they can't play football in some way, shape, or form. And there really is concern around the country for a lot of that. Another thing, too, people don't like those cupcake games, quote unquote, but those universities that play those cupcake games and are unfortunately the cupcake of the game, they make so many hundreds of thousands of dollars from playing those games. Those may be in jeopardy, too, some.
Yeah, those are incredibly important on both sides. Candidly, the Alabamas of the world could live without those more easily than the teams that they're playing there. What other concerns are you hearing, Paul? Because it feels like there's a lot of optimism moving forward in a lot of these sports. What are you hearing on your show?
Yeah, on that last point there, Greeny, I read the other day where Charlotte, which is a fairly new program, is playing at Tennessee opening game. It's about a $2 million game. They can't survive without it. And one of the other things, and all kidding aside, Charles was talking about this, I believe, that these smaller programs can't afford to test like the Alabamas and the Notre Dame, so that could cut them out. But the only thing that has interrupted the positivity train, Greeny, is what the Michigan president said yesterday in the Wall Street Journal. There's still a lot of reaction to that. I think there'll be a lot more today when everyone slowly gets back after the Memorial Day weekend.
For those who didn't hear it, and again, the president of the University of Michigan is by trade an immunologist, and he said that if there are no students on campus in the fall, that there will not be football in the fall or any other sports. Laura, is that something we're hearing from most other places? I feel like it's the opposite of what we're hearing in other places.
It is the opposite of what we're hearing, Greeny, but I do think, to Paul's point, there's more that's starting to bubble up about concerns now that this really is real, that these players are coming back on campus. We just spoke to Jimbo Fisher, the Texas A&M head coach, on First Take yesterday, and he was talking about how they're going to have their incoming freshmen today getting back to campus. They're going to test them, and I talked to a variety of coaches that say they're both going to give out coronavirus tests and antibody tests, but it's up to each individual school as to whether they test that way or whether they test that way at all. The screening proposals in place happen no matter what. That's checking temperatures, that's checking symptoms, things like that. But the actual testing is up to the individual school. And I think that's where this really may get very interesting over these next couple of weeks as these players start to come back on campus.
And it does come back to cost. And Paul, we brought that up, and that's right. Those are expensive things to do, and not everyone has the ability to do them. Guys, thank you. We'll come back and talk about name, image, and likeness a little later this morning. Meanwhile, coming up next, ESPN's Football Power Index thinks Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs are going to be very good again. Are they the favorite to win the Super Bowl? You'll find out next.